I'm Nikki Wright.
And you are tuned into Unsung Unwrapped, where we unwrap every episode of TV1's Unsung, one episode at a time. Today, we are talking about the legendary and the very much missed Al Jarreau.
Such a light.
Oh my gosh, he was such a light. He was just the most joyful. Like, you can't sing a song like Morning and not be an absolute joy of a human being.
Absolutely.
That is the happiest song ever, and you can't be in a bad mood when you sing it or when you listen to it. So good.
I think out of all the artists that we have unwrapped for this season, he's probably the most well-adjusted artist and the most well-rounded artist that we encountered this season.
He was really an international star, and man, so missed. One of those artists that I really wish I'd have been able to see live before he passed on.
Right.
One thing that I really liked about this episode was that we got to hear from him. And that was so great. I love that we were able to hear about certain aspects of his career directly from him, even though he's passed on. And that was a treat.
Yeah, you know, that kind of reminded me of, that's almost like what happened with Vesta Williams, right?
Yeah.
If you remember Vesta, her episode, you got to hear directly from her. And then not too long after the episode aired, she passed away.
Oh, that was so tragic.
It's important to hear some, you know, when you hear from others, mm-hmm. it's always their interpretation of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear from the other commentators, it's how they processed the life of Al Jarreau.
Yeah.
Or of any artist. Mm-hmm. But it's great to hear from the artists themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, you know, this is really who I am, and I'm processing it through my own lens, which in the end is really the only lens that counts.
That really counts. So yeah, this was really special. And it had some really great commentators and guests and people that just spoke about him. One of my favorites, who's my favorite bass player in the world, is Marcus Miller.
Right.
I love Marcus Miller. Marcus Miller is the reason why I love the bass the way I do today, mostly because of his work on Luther Vandross Records. Mm-hmm. So, and he looks fantastic. I think Marcus Miller is like 70. And I only say he's 70. I only say he's 70 because he has been on so many amazing albums that date back to like the 70s. And he looked so good. So it was good to see Marcus Miller.
I think for me, one of the things before we even got into music, right? Before they got into music, the fact that Al was an athlete. He was a scholar and a musician. Usually when you hear about artists, they throw all their eggs into one basket. So it's music. I mean, how many times have we heard about artists and they're like, oh, we dropped out of college or we dropped out of high school. But he, not only was he that way in high school, but then he went and got his master's in vocal rehabilitation. Like, who does that?
Yeah, he really did. I didn't know that part about him being an athlete. Side note, Al was kind of a snack. I didn't know he was kind of a snack.
Yeah, so, I mean, he didn't have that thug element that I like from time to time.
He was like that artsy kind that I like. So he was a little bit more he didn't have the rasp that you like. He was just a little bit more, a little California-ish, you know.
Yes. Yes, by the way of Milwaukee, California.
But you're right. He said he has master's in vocal rehabilitation, and he performed in a jazz quartet in college called the Indigos, and then he played basketball and football. Like he was very well rounded, and but very driven, and knew he definitely wanted to use his vocal gift in whatever vocation he did, you know. And so I just thought that was really great. Another thing I thought was really cool was that he performed in a trio with George Duke. So his relationship with George Duke started very early. George Duke was 16.
You know, that again reminds me of when you talk about Quincy Jones and Ray Charles, and how, you know, these great minds got together so young. These geniuses in their own rights, before we even knew who they were, they gravitated toward each other. I think, wow, like it's like a magnet. They're just attracted to each other, and the genius comes together. And again, it kind of embraces, you know, I love true musicianship. Okay. Sometimes in artistry and music, you ask somebody, why did they become, you know, a rapper, a singer? They're like, hey, you know, I like the girls. I wanted the money. I mean, real talk.
Yeah, yeah.
And so to me, a real artist, and I've said this before, a real artist will do it for a paycheck or do it for free, because it's just who they are. It's how they breathe.
Yeah, they would do it regardless.
Right. I just embrace who he was, because he really did love music.
He truly did. One thing that, and I don't know if it struck you as a surprise, but at 35, he had been passed up by so many labels.
Hello.
35 in this industry is, you might as well be 65 almost. Like to be 35 and unsigned, it reminds me about Bill Withers, you know, and how Bill Withers was older, and just it was to a lot of people, he may have been an overnight success, but he was far from an overnight success, you know. And again, someone else very well grounded, you know, in who he was and who he wanted to be, so in this industry. And so I think his resilience was just phenomenal, and just a true jazz singer.
And I think that for him to be passed over so many times, I think people need to realize that had nothing to do with his artistry.
Right.
They didn't have everything to do with, they didn't know what to do. I mean, I always say this, it's a music business. And so when you're in the music business, the business side wants to know, how can we market you to get the most bang for our buck? And so it had nothing to do with his talent. It had everything to do with the music business side of it, saying, we don't know how to market you to a broad audience to bring in the money that we want to see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like now, if you hop on YouTube, you can do a whole album on YouTube and nobody cares. Like, I'll do my own thing. But no, he was great. They just didn't know what to do with him.
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's it.
So let's talk about his sound for a minute, okay? So he's this great jazz artist. And one of the things that we know about jazz is that the jazz artist tends to not only sing, all right, if you're a vocalist, but you start to embrace the vocal acrobatic styles of turning into other instruments. So your voice is an instrument in song, but then you can turn yourselves into horns, drums, And you see that with Al Jarreau. You see that with Bobby McFerrin, who's brilliant at it. You see that with the songstress, Rochelle Pharrell. If you've ever seen Rochelle Pharrell live, she does a lot of ticks and sounds that are almost unnatural.
Yeah, right.
You know, so that's a certain type of sound that a certain type of lover, music lover, is going to appreciate. Now, the goal is, how do we take somebody who was this gifted and send him or her out into the world to attract a mass audience, which was the challenge that he had and that the record label had, which I think is why it, you know, 35 is when you kind of come into your own as a recording artist.
I think, and this is something that we've seen this season and other Unsung episodes, pop is overrated. Like, I understand that pop means popular.
Yes.
But then when we get to the point where it's just like, well, we just wanted to expand and be popular, I'm like, my God. Like, it, thankfully for him, it works. You know, yes. I mean, they did talk about in this episode how some jazz purist, you know, had issue with him because, you know, it really was the Dave Brubeck cover of Take Five on his live album that really, you know, propelled him. And, you know, he got a Grammy and everything. And as always, the record label wanted more and they wanted him to be able to reach wider audiences. And I get it, but I sometimes. I all the time feel that when record labels start going this direction of trying to take something that they love so much, they seem to love so much when they signed, and then unbeknownst to the artist many times, there's this underlying, once we get this, let's try to make this as pop as possible. And I hate that with a passion, but luckily for him, he really came away with some wonderful singles that I'm sure he was very proud of, that didn't make him feel like, well, you know, for the label, for pop people, I got to do Breaking Away or We're in This Love Together. But then we'll come right back to jazz. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't seem like that. It still seemed like he was doing music that he loved to do.
Right. And then when he first started releasing his projects, they really didn't get the play that they deserve the recognition. His first couple projects were like, you know, okay. His first release, We Got By. Mm-hmm. First single, You Don't See Me, right?
Yeah.
It's a very diverse project. And Al Schmidt, who was on the show, said there wasn't anything like him. And so I don't think people understood him at first. And I think that perfectly explains why his first couple projects did not hit the way I'm sure he would have desired them to hit, because people didn't understand the mainstream did not understand how to take this brilliance. Sometimes you can be so brilliant that people are like, I don't know how to embrace it.
Right, I don't get it.
But you know who was like that? Prince.
Oh, yeah. Prince didn't care if you got it, though.
Yeah.
He wasn't impressed about you getting it.
Prince was like, you know, there were moments that I think people were with him. Mm-hmm. And then there were moments where the mainstream was like, well, we don't really get this thing. He's like, I don't really care because I'm an artist and this is what I do.
That's true. And that was all throughout his career. Like, yeah. there was albums well after Love Sexy and all those. I was like, I don't know what this is. I'm with you. I'm still with you. I don't know what this is. And he was like, it doesn't matter. This is what I want to do. It doesn't matter.
Right. So with Al Jarreau, you have this genius. I would call him a genius. You have this musical genius who now the audience, the public, has to catch up to who he is.
Yeah.
Or you have to meet your audience where they are and bring them, gently bring them along and elevate their taste in music, I guess.
Yeah. I think what he was good at, if you think about the funk hit, which I did not know Roof Garden went number one. I had no idea that Roof Garden went number one. I was really floored by that. I think one thing that Aldre was good at doing was making his songs more palatable for certain audiences. Meaning, like, you could hear a song like Roof Garden or hear songs like We're in This Love Together and buy the album and think, I'm just going to get a whole album of We're in This Love Together. And that is not the case. Like, you're still going to get jazz. You know, you're still going to get, and it's, I think it was produced in such a way that it wasn't jarring. It wasn't like, I bought this and now I'm getting this jazz. Like, you know, it was very, I think it was seamless in a lot of ways. And I think it was also like that, he was such a fantastic performer that even if you went because you heard the songs that you love to hear on like soap operas, you know, that they would play. You were so taken in that maybe someone that didn't go in being a jazz fan would be more open to listening to jazz because they went and they saw him perform and they did the songs that they loved, but they also got a taste of who he was as a jazz artist. And I think that just makes him extraordinary.
I think Warner Brothers, they knew what to do when they realized that the first couple albums weren't really garnering the success that they wanted. What they did was they said, okay, and they should have done this from the jump, in my opinion. Mm. We know that he's brilliant live. We know We know he's brilliant live. To me, I would have, his first project should have been a live album because it captures a side of him that people are like, who is this person that sounds like this when you're sitting in a seat in a venue? And you know, I'm all for live performances. That is how I judge people. You know, what does live sound like? How do you sound going forward? Do you sound like you're amazing, or do you sound like they had to produce the heck out of your vocals in the studio to make it something that we can even stomach, you know? And so they did that. They started putting cuts on his albums that were live performances, and that seemed to be the trick to get more people to listen.
I don't know if you can release a live album as a debut album. It's almost, because a lot of times by the time an artist gets to a live album, they've put out songs that people now want to hear live. It's almost like putting out an album and be like, this is my greatest hits. It's like, but you have one album. We don't want to hear how you have greatest hits, you know? So, but I definitely agree with you, whereas they needed to definitely include live performances on his debut album, for sure. I think that makes sense, particularly in the age where, you know, there wasn't YouTube, there wasn't MTV, there wasn't, you know, you had to actually go see him live, or perhaps see him on Mike Douglas, like he did the Mike Douglas shows like that, where he was able to display his talent, and that gave you a taste of who he was live. But yeah, definitely putting live performances on his CD back then, albums back then. Oh man, Al Jarreau vinyl. Man, I can't wait for record stores to open back up. Lord, let it be. I gotta look into that. I gotta get some Al Jarreau vinyl. I gotta have it.
I think that I would definitely love some live performances of him. I know when you look at my music collection, I have like a lot of live performances, whether it be Donny Hathaway live, Layla Hathaway, Steve Wonder live. There are just certain artists that you think that they're talented in a recorded kind of studio session, but when you hear them live in an audience, like, oh my gosh, this is a whole different experience. And Al Jarreau was an individual that could stand that test and pass it with flying colors.
Yeah. Oh, so extraordinary. I love what Pat Prescott, radio personality Pat Prescott, had to say. He said he brought spontaneity into pop music.
Yes.
I love that, because he truly did. You know, he was not just a straight ahead singer. He always brought some really great moments in every song that he did.
Right. And then what, in 1983, he released Mourning. And again, he's just light. And so even that song just made you feel like, yeah, I can get up and do this thing. I feel light. I feel love. And I think that's really what he wanted to do as an artist. He used music to share the light that was innately inside of him. You know, when you think about the songs he puts out, it's all about being better and embracing this life.
Right.
And so I say kudos to his artistry and his wanting to connect to people.
Yeah. Yeah. He did that with Boogie Down too, which another song, You Cannot Be in a Bad Mood and hear. You can't be in a bad mood and say, I can be what I want to. All I need is to get my boogie down. How are you saying that with a frown? Like, that's not possible. Like, he just, his whole countenance and just what he put into the world was just beautiful. I really, really loved his ballads.
Yes.
I love songs like After All. The Moonlighting theme song, he made that show. Like, I loved hearing that so much. And I loved hearing him every week. You know, like, I loved hearing that every week. I love, you know, we talk about how I'm a huge fan of The Quiet Storm. And I love how The Quiet Storm would play that sometimes because you got to hear the full version.
Yes.
So that was dope. Man, I'm about to get back into some Al Jarreau.
Oh, gosh. But then, you know, as music changes, right? So you're having these hits. Right, so you hear it, right? You always hear it in unsung. It's like,
and then, yeah.
But as music does, it shifts, it changes, the sound changes, what audience like changes, and now you have to figure out who you are in this new climate. So, do I keep changing into something or someone that I'm not, or do I just say, you know what? I'm at a point in my life where I'm just going to do me. And he got to the point in his life where he was just like, I'm going to do me. And jazz is who I am. Yeah. And I'm going to rock out to this jazz thing. And it's going to be what it's going to be. And I think he could, because, you know, what his son said was that my dad wasn't flashy.
Right.
So he didn't need to kind of cater to a certain market because he needed to maintain a certain lifestyle of Lamborghinis and mansions. Right. And, you know, let me just do what I love and do this as long as God allows me to do this. And that's what he did when the music scene changed for him.
He did. I mean, and then after 20 years, he parted ways with Warner Brothers. They let his contract expire. And then I think I feel like at this point, it gave him the freedom to do, to really do what he wanted to do. He had established himself in such a way that he really didn't have to put out any more albums to be a touring artist.
Right.
You know, to be an artist that would sell out venues around the world. And so that was an issue. And that is such an accomplishment in someone's career, where someone could be like, I ain't put an album in 20 years. Yeah. I've been doing these same songs and people still pay to see me. They still pay top dollar to see me. That is like having tenure, you know, in the music industry. And so I think that's just outstanding that he was able to build his career. I want to actually go back to the time that he was out, because I was thinking about, like, he with George Duke, he did an album dedicated to his work with George Duke, and I think about him and like George Benson.
Yes,
around this time, like, this was such a sweet moment in music, jazz. I mean, George Benson, who I would love an unsung, a documentary, whatever they need to do to document George's career as also being a jazz artist.
Yes.
And also being a vocalist and also crossing over to pop. And like, they have very similar, I think, also worked with George Duke. You know, it's a lot of the same artists that we're seeing now. Nathan East was also on this unsung speaking about them. And I think, man, you talked about in the beginning about being well-rounded. Mm-hmm. That was such a great time of those types of artists. And so I would definitely, definitely love to see something come out about George Benson, because I think he's very similar as far as his career with Al Jarreau.
I mean, and I'm with you in the sense that, okay, I'm going to go back and do what I love, and I'm just going to tour, and I'm still going to sell out. You know, which shows there's an audience. There's a love and an audience for what I do. And Al Jarreau says, you can't cut me out of the game. And a lot of people who have left the game have left the game because they are too tender and soft. Hey, I got my lunch pail and I'm coming. And if you have an audience, I'll do it.
He sure did say that.
He said a lunch pail. And that took me back to like the cover of a Bill Withers album when he's standing outside with
that's
a lunch
right. pail. That's Listen, right.
I am coming to work. And if you show up, I will show out.
Yeah.
You know, because in the end, I think he did it for the people. He did it for the love of the people. So yeah. If they still want to hear me, I don't care if I don't put out an album. I'll show up and show out for you because you appreciate the musicianship. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, he sold out in Europe. I was very glad to see that he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about being concerned that our legends don't get their flowers. And I think that is a huge accomplishment. And to be able to get those accolades while yet being on earth. Yes. So I was very, very, very happy to see that.
He does his touring. And then in 1999, he signs with GRP Records.
Mm-hmm.
He releases Tomorrow Today.
Mm-hmm.
Which ends up number two on the jazz charts.
Come on now.
When you think it's over, guess what? It's not over. I still have something to come back to. And I want to add this. And this has nothing to do with music.
Okay.
But as a woman, can I tell you how touched I was to hear how much of a family man he was?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We would be remiss to not address that because you didn't hear about him womanizing. You heard others in the documentary in the Unsung episode say, you know, he would be on the road and we knew we had to be quiet because he was on the phone with his family.
Yeah.
Or when he was first in his relationship with his second wife, because he did get married, but then got divorced and they didn't really address that. But his second marriage, you know, if everything wasn't right at home, he was concerned. Mm-hmm. If he thought that they weren't on the same page, he might be on the road, but he's like on the phone trying to fix whatever it is. And that his son had wonderful things to say about him. Mm-hmm. And I say in a time of music where you hear artists going to and fro.
Wayward, yeah.
You know what I mean? Just running amok and running through. Oh, women. It was just amazing. And I just appreciated hearing and seeing a man, but a man of color, just say, you know what? Home is just as important to me.
Yeah.
And he was tapped in and connected to home. So I just wanted to just give honor to the fact that he honored his family.
Absolutely.
And then, okay, so he has his hit album, he has Tomorrow Today, but we know as time happens, you know, health concerns rise.
Yeah.
And in 2010, it was a big health change. He struggled with his breathing. He was having heart valve issues. And it was like, okay, I might not be able to do this like I want to do it. And I'm going to have to make some changes. He sang as long as he could, but he knew there came a time when he just said, you know what? If I can't do it the way it should be done, then I'm going to step back from this. That's what he did.
Yeah, he slowed down a great deal, but he didn't stop all the way when this started to happen.
No.
And to speak to his artistry, to be able to sit on a stool but still do all those instrument sounds with your chest and your voice. Al was a bad boy, you know, like he said that you can still sit down and do all that.
He showed up with his lunch pail.
With his lunch pail. He said, I'm ready to work. I'm gonna sit down and do it, but I'm gonna do it, you know, and I'm still gonna sell these shows out.
Hello.
Yeah, incredible.
You know, and then in February of 2017, he was called home. I like to say called home.
He was called home.
And I like how, you know, he questioned at the end of his life, had he done enough? Had he done enough? And, you know, if he could hear us now, you did more than enough.
More than enough.
He you left so more than enough.
Yeah.
You set a standard in what true musicianship is. And so we thank him for his contributions to music.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's about that time. 6 degrees of DeBarge. We use the DeBarge episode of Unsung as the great example of what a great Unsung episode includes, right? And so we like to compare every episode to DeBarge in some specific categories. So the first category for the 6 degrees of DeBarge is church, right? Yeah. Is there a relationship with God? And what say you, Toya?
Well, his sister did say that he was in church for 7 months keeping time with the music.
Well.
So, you know, which, I mean, as you said before, church is the great training ground in artist development, performance, coaching, learning, you know, about music. And so obviously that was influential to him. I mean, if he was keeping time in 7 months, I know I can't really make it past 8 bars of a good church bump. So
hello,
if he can, my rhythm just gets a little off. So if he can do that in 7 months, that's really the only thing that we saw, but he definitely, you know, knew about being raised in church and growing up listening to that music.
He was raised in the church. All the siblings sang in the church choir.
Right.
So that training that we always talk about, he definitely had that from a very early age.
Mm-hmm.
So the second degree would be addiction. And the answer to that would be?
We heard no trace.
None.
No trace. So didn't hear it. Nobody mentioned it. Nobody said anything about it. And I'm grateful.
Amen.
Because millions didn't make it. So I'm glad.
Business deals. So I don't think there were any business deals that went sideways. Right. I think it was just the natural progression of the music industry.
Right.
Because even when he left Warner Brothers, it wasn't a contentious departure. It was like they both were like, okay, we're at the end of this.
Yeah, we're at the end of this.
So that's not a business deal that goes wrong. It's just life.
Yeah.
Relational issues. No. Who didn't love him?
Right. Who was not loving Al Jarreau? Like, no, we got nothing on that.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem or the only person that would have an issue with him might be Satan. You know? He was just way too...
If you don't love Al Jarreau, then you must be Satan.
This is just way too much light.
Oh my gosh, Nikki, that's hilarious.
And then you have creative differences. I think the differences that he had, he basically said, I'm going to go back to what I love. I don't want to keep playing this game of trying to make everybody happy and then in the process making myself miserable.
Yeah.
Let me just go back to the jazz that I love so much. Mm-hmm. And he did that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really like a difference. It's just like, okay, I get to walk this path.
Right.
Happily ever after or never ending story?
Oh, happily ever after.
And why?
Yeah, he ended on a good note. I mean, we mentioned that he passed away right around his retirement announcement. I remember when this happened. I have a really good friend of mine who's a really big Al Jarreau fan. And I remember thinking when he announced his retirement, okay, this might be it. Because I knew he had health problems.
Right.
And he just appeared to me to be the kind of person where he had mentioned that he just couldn't stay home. And like, had he had stayed, let's say when the health issues came around 2010, and then he slowed all the way down. He may not have made it to 2017.
Hello.
You know, because that was part of him keeping going and keeping alive and vibrant. And so when he did announce his retirement, it was like no more shows. And then as sad as I was to hear that he had passed, and I was a little surprised that it was that quick, it was just like, if you knew his work ethic, mm-hmm. he had to perform to the very end.
Yeah.
You know, to the very, very end. And so I really respect that about him. And so I think for that reason, it's definitely a happily ever after.
I think he did not let music control him or the music business control him.
No, right.
And I think because of that, it is happily ever after, because he understood his love of music did not have to be controlled by the business of music, and he balanced it out with his love of family and friends. So what else do you want? Yeah. What else? At the end of life, you know, we've talked about this before, it's not all about the dollar, and it's not necessarily all about the awards. It's about doing what you've been called to do, do it with the excellence that you've been given to do it, and also embracing the life and love and light all around you. And I think he's a perfect example of that.
Sure thing.
So after watching all of this, do you feel that Al Jarreau is unsung?
I don't know. I'm going to say yes. And the reason why I'm going to say yes is because there was a documentary on Bill Withers called Still Bill. Mm-hmm. And you know how I just talked about, you know, George Benson and his career and how I'd like to see something about him. And I'm very appreciative for Unsung doing this because, yeah, yes, I will say Al Jarreau's Unsung. I would like to see more about Al Jarreau. Like, I really would like to see like a documentary like Still Bill on Al Jarreau, because I think his career, there's more of it to be told. And maybe I just want to see some live performances along the way. But yeah, I think Al Jarreau really is unsung. And I think, I don't know. I think sometimes when I think unsung, I think uncelebrated. And I don't know, Nikki, what do you think? I feel like I'm still on the fence. What do you think?
I think he's definitely unsung.
Okay.
And to me, when I think about unsung, I kind of think of not necessarily getting all the credit that you were due when you were maybe at the height of your career or whatever the case may be, where people don't really understand how you and your giftings changed the game or added to or greatly enhanced the game. And so in that, I know for myself, I did not know how much he had influenced the game. Mm-hmm. So it was musical education. And I better understand how Al Jarreau influenced music across multiple genres. I did not know that before this episode.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Oh, yeah, I'm about to get into more Al Jarreau for real. I did watch some live performances after watching Unsung. I did have like a day where I just pulled up stuff on YouTube, and it was so good. And then of course I went down a rabbit hole and for some reason wound up over by Grover Washington Jr. And I just, YouTube is a rabbit hole for sure.
That's why I spend way too much time on YouTube.
Well, that wraps up this episode on Al Jarreau. We're so grateful for his artistry. If you want to hear more episodes, we would love for you to subscribe to Unsung Unwrapped. You can find us everywhere. We are on iHeartRadio. We're on Spotify. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts. We are on Stitcher. We are all over the place. So please, please, please subscribe. And we would love to talk about these episodes with you. So we are also on Facebook. We have a Facebook group and a Facebook page. We're also on Twitter and Instagram under Unsung Unwrapped. So please follow us there. And we would love to hear what you have to say about this episode. Do you think that Al Jarreau is unsung? Do you think that Al Jarreau, whatever you think about Al Jarreau, you just let us know. We want to hear it. And let us know your favorite Al Jarreau songs. I always love hearing people talk about their favorite songs. So thank you for listening to Unsung Unwrapped. I'm Toya Haynes.
And I'm Nikki Wright. Unsung Unwrapped is produced by Lynn Webb, a.k.a. The Bat Tribble, at The Bat Base in Philadelphia.